Kate, what are you doing?
I'm playing peekaboo.
Okay.
Okay, I'll stop.
I turn the recording on.
Okay. Damn it! But Riot, I'm playing peekaboo. It's a game of full body pika.
That sounds creepy.
It really does.
Okay, I'm turning the video off.
I'm just going to blur the background.
You look so angelic.
Even with this gobbler? Okay, let's turn it off. Here we are. It's unrolled. It's a bright new day. Bloomberg is terrifying.
That was quite the show last night.
Oh, fear and arousal all mixed together in a melange of I don't know. I think we're fucked.
For our listeners, we are recording on. It's a Thursday. I don't know what the date is, but it's the day after the debate.
It's February 20th, 2020.
2020. 2020. And yeah, that debate was something last night. Got a little snipey. In a good way, I think. I think.
I think we saw Libby Dubs came out guns a-blazin'.
Yeah, our dear senator.
Dear, yes. I was just tickled pink by her performance. She's just so on her feet.
Yeah. 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 And poor Joe. Poor Joe.
I think he actually did pretty good. Like, he had a moment of clear rage.
That's great. But I didn't understand what he was saying the other 90% of the time.
Yeah, I don't know what happens there. I think he still has a chance.
Oh, he definitely does. I mean, I just... who the hell knows? I think the most interesting thing of the whole night was when our dear Chuck Todd asks if we go into a convention without... without someone hitting the threshold to be the nominee, should whoever has the most delegates be the nominee? And everybody said no, except for everyone basically said let's play by the convention rules, except for Bernie. That was the most interesting moment of the night. As fun as it was to see Elizabeth take down Bloomberg, that was to me the most interesting part of the night.
Huh. How did I miss that? I did take a couple bathroom breaks.
It was very quick, and it was right before they did it right before a commercial break, and then came back and did closing statements. You know, not, you could very well have missed it. And it was very quick. They just, like, rapid-fired around the podiums. And then I tried to Google what the rules actually are that they were theoretically playing by, and I was very confused. The best reference that I have is an old episode of West Wing.
Oh, great! So don't come to Unrolled for your political commentary.
Though I have like 12 podcasts in my feed that I will listen to today that will probably explain what the rules are to me. That was it. My favorite. I'm rewatching that series again, and there are so many moments where they just like. Aaron Sorkin decided, like, people don't learn civics in school, so I'm going to put in a scene that explains this concept. It really has no point to the rest of the storyline, but I am now going to explain what the debt ceiling is so that people know.
You're right.
is just like very, very odd.
And it's like such an important thing that we have pulled out of a lot of public schools
Yes.
or reduced significantly and drastically, and which is why we end up being far more right-leaning
I
than
mean,
that.
I actually remember that over the course of high school that it was like it became optional to take the like government class. There was like a government and economics class.
Oh my God, you're right.
And it like some of my class took it if it fit into their schedule, and so and then they kind of like phased it out altogether. And yeah, some of that might have been helpful.
Yeah, it is a
know.
way to keep the masses ignorant of their rights and processes that directly affect their lives. And there are people that benefit from that not being part of public school education. There are institutions that benefit from us not knowing shit. Can you share some of the podcasts, your favorite, because you listen to a lot more podcasts than I do, especially around I do the NPR Up First.
Is that like the daily, but for NPR?
It's the morning 15-minute slap in the face.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So like the daily. So yes, I will share what I tend to. Okay, how do I look these up? Okay, so The Daily from the New York Times. I listen to that usually every day. The sort of slew of Vox podcast, including Ezra Klein show, a show called The Weeds, which is like a very policy focused one called Worldly, which is more global focused. And then let's see here. And then Political Gab Fest, which is a Slate podcast. It usually comes out on Friday. Those are the ones that I kind of listen to every week. And then I always just download the PBS NewsHour because they have it on audio on your podcast feeds. Which I feel, which is like just a good, like straight up, like less, well, less slanted than something like MSNBC or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yes, I just am following all of these. What was the first one you said?
The Daily or the one after that?
I think it was The Daily.
Yeah. And those are the main ones. I'm trying to scroll back through. Yeah, those are the main like newsy ones. Oh, there's also the current season of The Impact is kind of interesting because they're doing shows on like other places where some of the ideas, the policies being floated, by the Democrats, where those have been tried either in another country or on a smaller, like local or statewide scale, and just like reflecting on how things like clean energy policy worked in Germany, and where they are with that policy now, and how free college worked in a little town in Michigan. And things like that. So that's been kind of interesting. I think that's just a this season of that podcast though. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it.
Awesome. Thank you.
But of course,
Oh,
this episode of Unrolled is brought to you by the fact that Kate and Ryan are so burnt out that we don't even know what topics to
no, we literally had a moment where we do a little video chat before we hit record so that we get to lay eyes on one another. And we started talking and we were like, what's the topics?
And then we just said, let's do it.
And then we pulled the trigger. So here's a topic that's been on my mind.
Okay.
What the role of a yoga practice is when negotiating the difference between pathological hypervigilance and being a quote unquote empath.
Can you, I think I get what you're asking. Can you maybe phrase it in another way?
No. Okay, I will. Okay, so this is what I've been thinking about. I'll say something like big and smart, and then I follow it up with like, so actually I saw this meme on Instagram. Okay, so I saw somebody sent me a beautiful fucking meme that okay, here it is. This is something that I have seen from multiple people, so I'm not going to attribute it because mm-hmm. I have seen this quote from multiple people and I am not sure who actually said it because everybody's been stealing it. I had to figure out if I was an empath or a traumatized kid who learned to anticipate and decipher others' feelings and needs so I could survive. So a lot of times we, especially in the yoga community, talk about being an empath. This is like a freaking trope or like,
yeah.
And I'm not talking about cultivating empathy or
sure.
the practice as a form of awareness, but
well, hopefully there is some, at least accidental cultivation of empathy through
oh, of
yoga
course
practice.
There is. And this is where it's interesting to me because the types of people, anecdotally, that are drawn to yoga are sometimes the type of people that would bandy about the term "I'm an empath."
Mm-hmm.
I'm an empath, and I am not a psychologist, but
we should probably just frame the whole.
No, I am not. I am just I'm abroad with some opinions, and I wonder sometimes. When people are using the word "I'm an empath," what they're actually saying is, "I have honed some skills from surviving trauma," whether that's capital T or lowercase T doesn't matter.
Sure.
But I'm actually just sort of questioning whether or not that exists. Being an empath, that's a thing. I don't know that that's a thing.
Yeah, I don't. I see that word used, and I know people who identify with that term. And I don't. I don't quite. Like, I feel like everybody has their own sort of level of sensitivity. Around suffering, and everybody develops their own skills in sort of reading other people and then also skills in preventing ourselves from being read. And we all have our own capacities for like how much that can sort of exhaust us. But I just feel like it's a really unnuanced term that gets thrown about. I'm sure people have nuanced understandings of it, but I haven't really heard any other than I'm just especially, you know, sensitive to things that usually the conversation very quickly moves into conversations of energy.
Oh!
Which is a very both not a word that I like. I understand what people are saying. I just think that there's that word brings up a whole lot of healthy skepticism.
Oh, yes. I'm so glad you brought up energy. Okay. And I get excited about it because I have one foot in both. I feel that I have one foot in that energy river and one foot firmly on the earth.
But shouldn't aren't they aren't those things really meant to be the same?
What, the water and the earth?
The well, y yes, to use that analogy, but if there's an understanding of energy, be it prana, chi, kundalini, what have you. If that isn't the people I know that can wield those and work from those understandings, there's like a real practicality and pragmatism around it. It's almost, and when they talk about it, it doesn't like, it's not very exciting. It's just like, oh yeah, I have an experience of this. And sometimes it's helpful to practice from that point of view. But most of the people I know who have a who do sort of have some understanding and perhaps skill with working in that way. They A are very private about it, and B when they talk about it, it's very just like I would not ascribe the phrase woo woo to it. They're able to understand it in context with the sort of gross experience of living, if that makes any sense.
They do it, but in a quiet way that isn't offensive to the neighbors.
Well, it's not offensive, but it's also not like sometimes the conversation around energy and usually the word empath is thrown around. It's almost like they're floating about like casting spells. Which in a certain respect is that, you know, that's accurate from a certain point of view. It's just oftentimes putting the you're like overlaying a very subtle, especially if you're trying to communicate this to somebody or trying to teach from this point of view, you're overlaying something that's very subtle before people necessarily can like put that one foot here and one foot there. If that tracks.
Vaguely. Yeah, I think we're on the same page there. Sometimes I think, you know, that there are people out there that are talking about energy and they're doing it in a way that is very specific and referencing previously referenced citations from a historical and religious perspective. And then I think that there are people that are talking about it because what they're describing is hereto forthwith without language.
Sure.
And it's
Sure.
not that so I have a healthy dosage of skepticism around it too. And yet, I was in a situation recently where I was hanging out with some people that were new to me. And, I know many people experience this too, but you know when you walk in a room and you read it,
Yes.
you read the fucking room. That's a real thing. So, like, the joke, read the room, or they didn't do a good job reading the room, you know, for comedians, that's a very real thing. So when you walk into a room full of people you don't know, or people you do know, or any combination thereof, you read the fucking room. So what does it actually mean to read the room? And this is important.
Isn't that just, you're reading the room, isn't that just an expression of physically, socially, viscerally trying to ascertain whether you are safe?
Yes!
I'm pulling the polyvagal theory off my bookshelf right now.
Oh my God, pull it out. Because it is that. It's, first of all, let me decide whether or not I'm, how much vigilance I need to have with this group. How safe am I? And we do that by what I think is a reading of microfacial expressions, gestures, smells, pheromones, like every single fucking variable in the room plays a part.
Mm-hmm.
And we use a term like the energy of the room as just sort of a sweeping catch-all for that, which is actually a culmination of multiple data points, you know? So I was in a conversation with a dear friend who I said to this dear friend, man, that just was the vibe, there was something, the energy was off. And they were like, what do you mean? I didn't sense that at all. And then I had a moment of, oh my God, is this my hypervigilance? Am I reading something that's not there? Am I reading into this too much? But then I have to, it's exhausting in my head. Then I have to step back and say, no. There were data points. And here they are. And when they aggregate, they lead me to this response, because historically I have, you know, experienced this before, and I can rely on certain, the repetition of certain procedural habits of humans. Like, but, you know, it's this constant dance of like, when is hypervigilance or awareness of the quote unquote energy of a situation when is that cultivated and over cultivated by yoga?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Oh, so meaning that.
Trauma-informed yoga is great, but sometimes the perpetual cultivation and encouragement of awareness, I believe, can lead you to a place of potentially disruptive hypervigilance.
I mean, is it you know, and I think it's a chicken and the egg thing, because is it that the cultivation of awareness is doing that, or that the social, cultural structures have become so overstimulating that any ability towards heightened awareness or sensitivity that we could develop through yoga is almost not necessarily useful in dealing with the overstimulation of the world we live in?
Can you say that again?
So is it that we're cultivating a heightened sense of awareness, which they do studies on it, but most of the studies they do are people in long, 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 long meditation retreats, that there is a hypersensitivity that develops, and some people develop it to sound, some people develop it to... I've experienced it a couple of times, just in like the visual field gets like kind of almost too vivid. I don't really want to say much more than that. And then there's a whole list that I don't have in front of me of ways that happens. But I think that's less possible on a like day-to-day yoga practitioner level. And there could be some effect of, we're doing this practice, some of which is relatively new, some of which is relatively old, but the point of which is to become more awake and aware. And if we're becoming more awake and aware to this world that's in kind of a shitty situation, is that going to be so overstimulating and so upsetting that we can't actually cope? And then it triggers a sense of not safe in the nervous system.
Biggin.
I have opened the polyvagal theory, and those of you that have this book on page 16 and 17, it describes essentially, I'm just going to read this because I think it's helpful. The polyvagal theory describes three stages in the development of a mammal's autonomic nervous system. Each of three adaptive behavioral strategies is supported by a distinct neural circuit involving the autonomic nervous system. One, immobilization, feigning
Okay,
death.
I need you to read a little slower because this is super interesting.
Okay. Do you want me to go back or just slow
Yes,
down?
because that was flying through in a monotone.
Okay. Each of the three major adaptive strategies is supported by a distinct neural circuit involving the autonomic nervous system. Number one, immobilization. Bullet point one, feigning death slash behavioral shutdown. Two, the most primitive component, shared with most vertebrates, and it's dependent on the oldest branch of the vagus nerve, an unmyelinated portion originating from the brain stem known as the dorsal motor nucleus of the vagus. Two, mobilization, fight or flight behaviors, dependent on the functioning of the sympathetic nervous system, a system associated with increasing metabolic activity and increasing cardiac output. Three, social communication and social engagement, facial expression, vocalization, listening, dependent on the myelinated vagus, which originates in the area of the brainstem known as the nucleus ambiguus. The myelinated vagus fosters a calm behavioral state by inhibiting the influence of the sympathetic nervous system on the heart. I find that to be fascinating. Did I
It is
lose you?
fucking a little, but can you rephrase it for our listeners
Yes.
in
So it's
English?
basically saying that the whole idea of this sort of sympathetic parasympathetic, almost like being at odds with one another, is kind of not really what's going on. It's that we do have this freeze mechanism that can kick in and is sort of quite ancient in our sort of evolutionary development. And then we have the fight or flight mechanism, which we're all kind of familiar with at this point. And then in order to create social bonds and like be friendly, something has to happen to inhibit that fight or flight response. And it's basically the brain. My understanding is it's the brain is the nervous system is just constantly trying to perceive safety. And if
Oh
it
my
doesn't
gosh.
perceive safety, then it is going to kick in some level of that fight or flight. And this, you know, I noticed this, you know, obviously we maybe have in instances of this happening in like big gross forms. Like the other day I was walking down the street and did not see that there was a dog in the yard, and it just started like barking just hysterically, and I like jumped like 5 feet in the air, like just was
Oh.
like didn't see it coming. And like that obviously is like a very clear instinct of fight or flight. But I also notice when I walk into social situations, and I think, you know, yes, we could talk about this in terms of like people who have had severe trauma, and obviously that's worth understanding and very interesting. But then there's also like if you in any way hold some form of marginalized identity, when you walk into a room, the amount of is this okay? Am I okay here? What the fuck's going on? It's like, if you really pause and notice that, it's like fascinating. And like the assumptions that you're quickly making about the space you're in and the people who are in that space. And it's both, you know, deeply embedded and entirely dependent upon our construction of the social world in which we live in and how we place ourselves in that.
And, you know, people that experience that sort of elevated chronic level of stress, essentially, of the nervous system, it's not that it's bad. Like, we're built to feel stress. Stress isn't inherently bad. But when you never get a let up on it, it, you know, it's associated with increased risk of heart disease. And who is heart disease killing, you know, the most? All of us. But I also think about it from a perspective of marginalized communities that have the highest mortality rate around essentially stress and heart disease. And a lot of that is, where is there a space to perceive safety?
Yeah.
Where does that space exist?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And to bring it back to yoga.
It's all yoga, man.
To bring it back to what happens in your like average everyday yoga classroom. The financial reality of needing to cram a bunch of people into a classroom in order to keep studios alive.
Does not lend itself to a super safe feeling space.
No, not in the slightest.
God, yeah.
But to
be fair, I don't feel more safe in a class with less people.
No, but there is, I would argue that.
I feel more seen, and that to me is sometimes terrible. Like, I don't.
Sure.
It's harder to hide, and visibility is an element of safety.
Sure. That's fair. To me, walking into a big classroom is always just like a little I don't know. I always have to get over that hump of like, okay, this is going to be all right.
This is going to be
like, but there's like an active like, oh my god. And I think, you know, everyone's different. There's no way to, like, I think the trap that people fall into is, like, you have this realization and you go to fix it. And it's, in certain ways, you can't totally fix it because everyone has their own unique experience. And someone might feel equally, you know, to your point, you know, being seen by the teacher might actually be more of a stressful situation than being able to walk into a room and be kind of anonymous and just move around a little bit. Absolutely. So it's not, to me, the discussion is okay, how can we fix that? But can we be aware that those dynamics are actually occurring at all times? And the level of unknown of what might set a student into a moment of anxiety. It's staggering. And if you really tried to like pay attention to that, you would probably just, and like try to solve for that, you'd probably just end up not teaching. You'd get so wrapped up in what should I do and what shouldn't I do that you probably just would stop. stop teaching altogether. But I do think there's a value in being aware of that. And the only way that I have been able to do that is to just try to catch it, how that plays out in my own experience. Not necessarily that everyone is going to be triggered by the same experiences as me, but just that what happens in that moment of anxiety, what happens in that moment of sort of fight or flight engagement, even if it's just quick and subtle. And I was thinking about this in terms of the hands-on assist the other day. Like, I was in a class, and I don't know, for whatever reason, like, I don't even think I had, like, a little clip thingy on my mat. And the teacher walked by, and there was a moment where I was just, like, not startled by them walking by, but, like, the thought that they might adjust was enough to, like, kind of, like, freak me out a little bit. And then it subsided, and then it went away. Like, it wasn't a big dramatic thing, but I caught that and note that that's probably happening to other people when the teacher walks around. Now, is that going to stop me from walking around the room? No. But it's just interesting.
I don't know. It stops me from walking around the room. I walk around the room a little. I don't want to make the declaration that I do not ever move. I do move. But a lot less. And it's for that reason. I think right now I'm, you know, and I certainly am not saying that you shouldn't walk around the room. I'm just saying for me in this particular moment, I tend not to. And it's for the reason you just described. And there's different ways a person can walk that can do things or not do things. So you can walk very quickly and make sort of a lot of noise, and there can be an air of urgency or panic to your gait that is disruptive. But even in the most mindful and quiet of forefoot stepping, just the mere act of walking near someone's mat can be disruptive, as you said. Are you there?
Yes.
So, because of that, I am very judicious in getting up to walk if I do in a classroom. And it's usually during major transitions where everybody's kind of moving anyways.
Yeah.
So that it's like if I go to change the music or remove the music or do something to the lighting, if I go from one portion of the room to the other, I try to do it when they're moving too.
Or and when it's just an inappropriate song comes on.
Yeah, exactly. When it's like, oh shit, look what I've done. I'm so sensitive in some areas and like a dope in others. I, for me, realized that like my presence near somebody's mat is not a variable I'm playing with right now. So I like people to have a space to have their own thing. And I always find it like, oh, here's the teacher when they're near my mat. And here they are. Whoa.
Yeah.
Here they are.
I mean, to me, the walking around is just a being able to see.
But what That's if you it. Didn't see?
Well, then what do you mean, what if I couldn't see?
What if you knew that your sense of sight was, like, not reliable?
Well, then I would be talking people through my own experience of practice and not necessarily teaching in the same way that I like to teach because I would not be responding to what I would not be responding to what I was seeing the student do. And absent some other feedback mechanism, I think that'd be kind of, it would just very much change the dynamic of the of what I'm doing in the classroom.
I don't buy that. I've heard this before from other people. Like, I want to be able to see. When I sit at the front of the room, I see a whole fucking lot.
When yes.
I prowl the room, and yes, I chose that word intentionally. I don't know. I'm sort of dancing around the argument that, like, do you really see more? Do you have to see everything?
You don't have to see everything, but it is helpful to be able to go, okay, we're going to do a, like, for the next 5 minutes, they're going to be turned this way. So it might be helpful for me to go sit in another location in the room.
Okay, but that's like a different thing. That's like they're transitioning, you're transitioning.
Yes.
That, yeah, yeah. And I'm not really referring to that. Like, if you're reorienting yourself ostensibly to the new front of the room.
Or oftentimes it's actually reorienting myself
middle.
To the middle or the so that I'm able to observe the back of whatever is going on.
Yeah, yeah. So that's you reorienting yourself in relation to the class as a whole. That's different than what I'm talking about, which I think, and this is helping me refine my thoughts on the matter.
Because I do think, I do experience what you're saying, is that there is a walking around the room that is just me being nervous, almost like a self-soothing situation. I've observed that as well, that like sometimes I'm walking around the room and it's not for visual purposes. It's because
a thing to do.
It's a thing to do. And sometimes, like, you know, weighing what's going on, if I'm feeling frazzled and the walking around the room and repositioning is going to help me to quiet myself, to a point where I can, like, there are times where I choose to do that. But there are also times when it's mindless. When I just catch myself being like, what am I doing? Like, why am I walking around? Let me just go sit down.
100% agree. And, I think that's really what I'm referring to is, like, I don't understand why is this person traveling? Why is there traveling?
Yeah.
Like, when they're teaching, you know, and it's something that's associated oftentimes with newer teachers, the prowling, traveling, roaming, teacher. But I, there's wisdom sometimes in laziness. Sit down, be grounded.
Mm-hmm.
I'm such a petty bitch know-it-all.
You do know everything, Kate. Everything that there is to know.
Ryan.
How did we get here? Oh yeah, empaths.
No, but seriously, am I a super know-it-all? I'm sort of having a moment of quiet reflection and self-awareness very publicly.
You do assert your opinions.
Well, we wouldn't have a show if I didn't.
This is all for you, folks.
It's all for you. Yeah, all this. No, okay, yeah. So this is the other thing. It's like sometimes I forget my place.
Okay.
I forget my place. I am only allowed to have so many opinions about a certain number of things before it's just best that I sit down and keep quiet.
Oh, God.
You know? Like, I mean, there's like an element of that too.
Sure.
Internalized
Sure.
misogyny. It's my favorite song. It's your favorite dance. We have a good time and then we shut our mouths and wait for our hymens to grow back. Internalized misogyny. I should wash my hair and do my nails. I'm not lovable if I've got hair on my legs. Don't you dare vote for Libby Dubs.
There, that I don't know how we top that.
Oh man, it's stuck in my head now.
Should just someone, if someone really wants to do a deep dive and comb through all 126 episodes and pull every song that Kate has ever sung and do a mashup of sorts.
Oh, the reward. The reward. I'll come and perform it live. Wherever you want. Oh, are we announcing?
We can, unless there are other things. I was going to save that for the end.
Yes. Look. We're in the season of terrifying politics.
It's true.
So, what can we do as teachers and as practitioners of yoga? I will not say yogis because that does not feel right. That's another thing. Can we stop calling ourselves yogis?
Do people still use that word?
Yeah, they do all the fucking time.
Yeah.
Mostly in shitty marketing. I'm sorry, not shitty marketing. Mostly in marketing.
Shitty marketing that you're putting out into the world from your command center.
Thank you very much. I do a lot less of that now and
Okay.
more of other things. So
Fabulous.
I am now like a couple steps of distance from that.
Okay.
I was trying to not sound like an arrogant dick, and I don't think it worked.
Mean, we have 126 episodes of you and I being arrogant dicks,
Oh,
so
okay, that's right. Oh God, we're terrible. So what were we talking about there? Oh yes, marketing and the word yogis. Do people refer to themselves as yogis?
I don't think so.
Yeah, so maybe it's just marketing.
I think it's just marketing. Should we just let the cat out of the bag? Let's do it.
Right, let's do it.
You want to?
So, what's the date, first of all?
It is the 18th of April, I believe. Let me triple confirm that by opening up my calendar. Come on, Google, you can do it. No, you can't. Okay. Well.
Wow.
April 18th. I was correct. April 18th at, I believe, 6 p.m.
April 18th at 6 p.m. What will you be doing?
I will be joining Kate at Down Under Yoga in Cambridge, Massachusetts, on Massachusetts Avenue for a live recording of Unrolled Podcast. As part of Down Under Unite's yoga festival. And Kate might be there too.
We're gonna record live and in person. We're gonna sing songs and dance and do yoga. Okay, we're not gonna do any of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have thoughts on how we should construct this? Let's live brainstorm behind the scenes on how we should construct this foray into live podcasting.
Yeah, I think what we should do is we're going to have some topics, but then we should have some room for people to have topics as well.
Yes, I was thinking that we could, we'll walk in with a few things to say, as we often do. And I think maybe we'll put some sort of form up on our website for people to submit questions, comments, topic ideas, things that they would like to hear us speak about live. And then we can do our best to include some of those online things and then also take questions from the audience, of which there might not be any, but
Oh God.
so if you'd like to join, here's the idea. So the festival is just one fee, and I believe it is $35. Yes, so it's $35, and a portion of that goes to benefit the Down Under's Teacher Training Scholarship for people of color. And you get access to both days, Saturday and Sunday, of classes. They're like short form, like 50-minute classes. And ours will be our podcast will be at the end of the day on Saturday. So, for instance, you could oh, there's some lovely classes happening right before the podcast. A meditation class with my good friend Fez at 3, and then Michael Galvin, an Iyengar teacher, doing cultivating mindfulness and asana practice, and then an Ashtanga class with Didi and Sam, who are both lovely, right before we sit down to talk about stuff. And so you pay 35, you can come to as much or as little of the weekend as you'd like. And yeah, Kate, did you participate in this last year?
Oh, I did. It was a hoot. So I taught, I don't know, some sort of hip hop thing. And that I took Justine's workshop, which was just mind-blowingly brilliant. I love listening to her talk. Oh, I could listen to her talk for days about yoga. It's fucking great. And then halfway through, she called me up to like do a cameo thing, and then I high-fived out Tara Morris, who's another, she's a hot shit. And I just, the vibe of the whole thing was a lot of fun. Like, I err on the side of being critical of most things, but this was like how I remember, when there's just like a buzz because like there's just a lot of people that are really excited about practicing in a slightly different context.
Sure.
It had that vibe of it, of like, oh, it's not our normal classes, but it kind of is. And here we all are, and here we're not. And oh my God, it's sweaty. And what are you doing? What are you taking? It feels like a what's it called? The Newport Folk Festival.
Sure.
But like much smaller and yoga.
Yeah.
But
Much smaller and yoga.
there's a joyousness to it
Yeah.
that was able to peel back my layers of cantankerous old Muppet in a really fun way. So I'm looking forward to it. I love getting to practice with people that I don't see often.
Indeed.
And I'm really excited to see if anyone comes to our thing. That'll be interesting. It might just be you and I in a room again, alone, recording,
It's
which
just,
is
which is
fine.
totally fine.
We're used to it. Won't be offended. Otherwise, just fucking come. We'll
I
Which, by the way, that's what it's like to have sex with me. Too soon?
Not soon enough.
Okay.
So, Unrolled Podcast Live. Let's see if we get fired. So that's going to happen. So again, April 18th, 19th, our little podcast will be from 6 to 7:30 on Saturday. It's the last event of the day. It'll be a grand old time. And you can find, you can find the whole schedule at, well, I'll put it in the show notes, but it's just downunderyoga.com/downunderunites. And that will get you there.
Woohoo!
Okay, then.
Anything else we need to cover?
I don't think so. Oh, I'm really, really trying to get the ability to support Unrolled up on my website. It's just I've been subbing for lots of human beings and just haven't had time to,
myself included,
haven't had time to sit down and get the links up for that. So hopefully by the time this comes out on Monday, I will have gotten my act together, and you'll be able to help support the podcast, which I think I mentioned last time. We're just asking for just an $8 a month contribution, which of course goes to help to host the whole thing and to pay Kate and myself and the guest hosts who we'll be having on maybe a little bit more as the year progresses, and just to keep this thing floating, you know. And then you'll also get access to any of the audio classes and practice resources that I'll be developing on my website as well. And if for any reason you want to support the show, but you just don't have the financial means to do that, you can always write us a poem.
Oh, please do.
Sing us a song.
Send us a picture.
Write us an email. Some gorgeous prose, perhaps.
Send us a nudie. I'm sorry, are we still recording?
Yes. So,
if anyone's good at Photoshop, do something. Unroll.
Sure.
Related.
If someone wants to draw us a logo.
That would be awesome.
That would be a wonderful way to support the podcast.
Oh my God, that's brilliant.
Because I know we have some very talented visual artists who listen. We would love that in the way of support as well. So thank you all.
Bye.
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 Bye.